Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 168 of The Morning After. I am your host, Sari Kamen.
And I'm Leslie Stockton. Today on the show, we have Emily Seaman from Diesenkopf, NYC. So, Sari, I hear you have some food news for us.
You heard right, Leslie. How did you know that?
Well, Birdie told me.
Yes. It's been a pretty big week in the food news world. A lot of things happening in Japan, and I have to say, Leslie, you made the suggestion that instead of calling this segment food news, we should just call it
What's Happening in Japan.
I think it's so good. So first off, this is happening in Japan. Cup of Noodle has launched two new luxury flavors to prove that they are far more luxurious than your common instant ramen. They now have Lux Shark Fin and also Soft Shell Turtle flavors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's not good for conservation.
Apparently no animals are actually in the cup of noodles. Emily, yeah. Are you a fan of cup of noodles?
Yeah, I think way back when, but I never used the flavor packets. I just like with ramen noodles, like I cook the noodles separate if I can.
But you're a chef, so
maybe. Well, I just would eat them plain with butter when I was like in college.
See, in college, like, do we want... Like, if you're a stone college kid, are you like, ooh, I want some shark fin?
Give me that soft turtle.
Soft shell turtle.
Soft shell turtle.
It's like, maybe you would have to be that stone. Like, you either have to be, like, not from this country, or, like, incredibly stoned to be craving, like, soft shell turtle.
Or adventurous and curious.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Okay, so that happened in Japan, among many other things, which I'm not going to tell you about. Okay, now we're going to move to Connecticut. Where lots of weird things also happen, including there's like this annual tradition that Pez hosts a gigantic Easter egg hunt every year for Easter, but it was canceled this year because too many parents went like ape shit and they like rushed the field before Pez gave them like the official go time and like started knocking down children, and a child got a bloody nose.
Wait. So this is like the Oklahoma Sooner, like this is a Connecticut version of the Oklahoma Sooner
thing. I don't know what that is.
They call them Sooners because they like before it was like the big land grab. And people who like went out the night before to like get their land before, you know, everyone. There's boomers and there's Sooners. And the boomers waited for the gun and the Sooners.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about, but the answer is yes.
Yes. So basically people.
Are you talking about the Pez people?
Yes. Okay. Now I'm talking about the Pez people.
No, these crazy moms or dads. Okay, wait, I just have to read this quote. Okay, so one mom, this is from the article. One mom there with her four-year-old says, when time came for the first start, quote, parents just bum-rushed that area. Her traumatized son told WFSB, somebody push me over and take my eggs. And it's very rude of them, and they broke my bucket.
Oh, man.
They broke his bucket.
They broke his bucket.
Yes, yes.
I don't understand what...
Parents, get a grip.
I don't get it.
I know.
What's this world coming to?
I know. If Pez has to cancel an Easter egg hunt, it doesn't bode well. All right, also in Connecticut, a livid woman called 911 over the wrong pizza order. So apparently she ordered...
Oh, I heard about this.
You did?
Yeah.
It was on the news. Not just my news, other news. She apparently had ordered a half cheese, half bacon pizza. But they delivered a half cheese, half hamburger pie.
Ooh.
Oh, no, they didn't.
No.
So she called 911, and I believe we have the clip. David, do you have
that? 911, location of your emergency.
Hi, I just have a question. Okay. If I order a pizza and they don't want to give me my money back, can you guys do something?
Ma'am, I'm not sure. That's something you have to take up with them, but that's not something you would dial 911 for. Like 911 is for life-threatening emergencies only.
Oh, can you call the rotisserie or something?
Well, what happened?
Cause I order a small piece of half cheese and half bacon, and they bring me a half hamburger. So I come them back, and they don't want to give my money back. They keep hanging on me.
Okay, yeah, that's not a police matter, ma'am. You'll have to work that out with the pizza shop.
Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and say I totally respect that. I love that.
I don't even know where to begin. It's like those kids who get too stoned and, like, call 911 because they think they're dying from eating too much pop brownies.
No, dude, that was a cop who did that. That was Food News a little while ago. I love that. I think that if the pizza place wasn't going to accommodate her order, she had no choice but to call 911.
What is going on in Connecticut?
Right, Connecticut.
Like, seriously misguided.
Connecticut, did you wake up and think you're Florida? I mean, Connecticut, get it together. Yeah, not a good look this week, Connecticut.
Connecticut, Florida with seasons.
Connecticut is the new Florida. All right, that's our food news. We hope we won't have to revisit you next week, Connecticut. Keep listening. We'll be back with Emily Seaman from Diesengoff NYC.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you. Have you listened to A Taste of the Past? It's a show devoted to connecting our current food world with its storied past. Host and culinary historian Linda Palacio welcomes chefs, scientists, authors, scholars, and revolutionaries into the studio to discuss food culture and history from around the globe.
Have you seen the culture of food change over the past 25, 30 years?
It's been incredible.
Linda covers content ranging from the history of black chefs in the White House to behavioral psychology and the evolution of Italian food in America. You can listen to A Taste of the Past anytime on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes and Stitcher.
Emily Seaman is the executive chef of Diesengoff in Philadelphia. The cult hit Humusia, run by Michael Solomonoff and Steve Cook. Diesengoff is opening its newest location in Chelsea Market in New York, and Seaman has moved to Brooklyn to be its new chef and partner. Welcome to the show, Emily Seaman.
Hi, guys. Thank you.
Hi. Thanks for being here. Okay, so you just moved here from Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding our fair city of Brooklyn?
I mean, besides, like, sticker shock every time I leave my bed, like, everything is so much more expensive. It blows my
mind. Yeah, it is more expensive.
I know that
Philly.
Everybody says that, and, like, I was expecting it, and it's not a very exciting thing to be surprised about, but besides that, I mean, it's, like, it's fun.
It's always fun. $20 tax just to leave your door.
I know.
It is always, I mean, on the flip side, like, I love going to Philly because it's so much cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, people should come more often.
But then maybe it would get more expensive if they did.
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's still Philadelphia, guys.
Philadelphia is a really great city.
I love Philly.
No, it's awesome. There's great there's way more neighborhoods here, obviously. There's, like, more diversity, but, like, Philly, I always forget how big it actually is. Like, mm-hmm. I pretty much stay in my comfort zone, which is, like, close to work and my apartment. But if you, like, venture, like, a mile in either direction, it's, like, a totally different universe. Like, I just discovered there's, like, a little Cambodia in South Philly that I never knew about. It's, like, a two-block swath, and that's it. but there's like 20 Cambodian restaurants and grocery stores.
We have like 10 little Cambodians.
Yeah, I know. I know, guys, but it's, come on. This is like the JV league, so.
No, I'm just saying. Get excited.
Yeah.
We have all that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the whole like Mike Solomonov, Steve Cook consortium is really, I mean, it's just had an unbelievable year.
Yeah, it's been exciting. I mean, Mike is hopefully going to win the James Beard Award next month or whenever it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're on their tour with their new documentary that's going to come out.
What's the documentary?
It's called In Search of Israeli Cuisine. So he went with Roger Sherman, who's a filmmaker, to Israel. I think they started like 2.5 years ago. And they spent like a month and a half or 2 months or something just like eating and like talking to chefs and like farmers and wine producers. Like, there's one scene where they go to a kosher winery and none of the winemakers can touch the wine because they're not rabbis. So they're just like, this is the hardest job I've ever had, but it's like really rewarding because they make like incredible wine.
Yeah. And the cookbook is out.
Cookbook came out. That was bananas. We are opening in New York, which is like crazy to me that it's actually happening finally sometime soon.
How's that going for you?
It's good. I mean, like, we thought we'd be open by now, but like, it's a restaurant, so it always takes a lot longer than you think.
Opening something in New York City is...
It takes forever.
It takes forever, and it's horrible.
Horrible, yeah.
But once it's up and going, it's very exciting.
Yeah, no, I can't wait. And we have a really good team already, like, put together, so I can't wait to work with them.
So tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up getting involved at Dizengoff and, like, how you met Mike and just, yeah, where you came from.
I grew up outside of Philly in a little town called New Hope, which is on the Delaware River. I went to college in Western Mass at Smith, which is a women's college. And my senior year, I lived in a vegan co-op, which is the first time I really had to cook for myself.
And you were like, hummus.
And it was, and it was like,
and what are things I can put on hummus?
And it was a vegan co-op. And I remember, like, I got really into cooking for all the other students that lived there. It was like 16 people. It was really small. It was awesome. But we like had like a farm share and like, we made everything from scratch, so I got really into it. But I did want to, like, eat meat, so I would have to, like, hide it. I would, like, wrap it in, like, kale and, like, other... I would, like, take, like, a package of chicken or, like, bacon that I was taking to a friend's house to cook, but I had to keep it. So we'd wrap it in bags of, like, produce and, like, stash it in the back of the fridge so no one would see it. Because someone did find someone else's, like, cheese ones, and they flipped out.
Oh, no, would you have gotten kicked out?
I feel like I would have gotten, like...
That's pretty bad to hide,
run out of town
to hide your meat and kale.
I know.
I mean, that's kind of a new low, Emily.
I'm sorry, guys. To all my fellow co-op
who are listening to this right now.
10 years after the fact, you have to find out about this.
Oh, my God. The secrets are coming out.
I know. But after college, I moved to Austin, Texas. I went to culinary school there, which was a huge waste of time and money. But I did it, so here we are. I went to California for like 6 months to open a restaurant with the group I was in Austin with. And then I moved to Philly, and my brother suggested that I check out Zahav. And I ate there, and I applied for a job there like 4 times. I got a job somewhere else in the meantime, and finally they like emailed me back, and I got a job there. And then 6 months later, I was a sous chef. And then a year and a half later, we opened Dizengoff. And it just, like, kept unfolding, and it was awesome. So here we are now in New York.
So that's been a really rewarding journey.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And Mike took me to Israel last summer, which
was
fucking awesome. Sorry, yeah, I can say that, right?
You can say whatever you want on the show.
It was fucking awesome.
Did you guys eat all the hummus?
We ate so much. It's, like, so different there. Like, you've been to our restaurant in Philly, so you know, like, what ours tastes like.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, like, 6 or 7 different varieties of it. Like, we had it with ful, which is like the stewed fava beans, which is actually Egyptian. We had it with like the cooked chickpeas on top. We had the stuff that's like made to order in a stall in the market, which is like totally different than anything else I'd ever tasted. It's like really warm and like chunky and like texture, like it just tastes like cumin and chickpeas. But no, everything was great, and they took us to some really awesome places and like farms and stuff.
Is hummus something that you were always into, or is it a food that you were, like, just kind of introduced when you started working at Zahav?
I never knew that it was, like, a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had never cooked Middle Eastern food before either. I didn't know anything about it. I cooked Mexican food for 3 years, which, like, I kept, like, drawing parallels with, like, spices and, like, reliance on, like, a couple, like, staples, like, certain kinds of beans and rice. Like, pilafs are huge in, like, Middle Eastern cuisine, and rice is huge in Mexican cuisine. And, like, having, like, really, really high-quality primary ingredients. Like, we had really great masa that we used in Austin. And, like, in Philly, at Zahav and at Dizengoff, we use this really amazing tahina that comes from, it's, like, processed in Nazareth in Israel, and then it's shipped over to Philly, packaged and sold by Sum Foods. And it's, like, I think it's better than the stuff I had in Israel, too. It's, like, unreal. It's so good.
What makes it so amazing?
It's really nutty. It doesn't taste... And also, like, first and foremost, there's nothing in it but sesame seeds. There's no preservatives, no salt, no sugar, no fat, no oil. It's just, like, milled sesame. And it's, like, totally consistent. And the owners are from Philadelphia, and it's these four... It's these three sisters, the Zeitelmans, and they... They founded this company, like, they're, like, growing rapidly. They're all over the place now, and it's a great product. Like, and they do a great job.
Do they have a chocolate version of that?
They do. I have one that I keep under the register in Philadelphia with a spoon next to it.
I want
for
that.
Hard days.
You've had that.
I have had that. I had a day retreat.
You did?
Yes. That stuff is
so
delicious.
Good. We put that on
everything.
It is the best stuff ever.
It's so good.
If you're
so
listening, good. Stop it and go get
go
it.
Go get it.
Go get it. And then listen later online.
Yeah. Please.
So I have a question. So my hummus game isn't great. It's not horrible.
It's good.
Could you give me, like, it's good. Could you give me, like, three tips, like, to improve my hummus?
I think the first one that no one knows or they're beginning to realize is that when you make it either canned or dried chickpeas, you can start with either. You have to, like, cook the shit out of them. Like, you have to blow them out of the water, literally, and make them look like mush. Like, no, like, you don't have to sit there and peel the skins off. Like, I don't care what, like, your Lebanese grandma said about peeling skins, but, like, that's not necessary.
How'd you know I have a Lebanese grandma?
Sorry. I just knew. So just cook them till oblivion. The other thing that people don't know about is, like, you don't just take, like, your chickpeas and, like, your raw tahina, peanut butter stuff, and, like, some lemon juice and some garlic and, like, throw it in a food processor and expect it to, like, be what it could be. You have to, like, treat every product like it's special and, like, it deserves its own attention. So it takes longer, but, like, the tahina you would want to whip with all your seasonings and, like, with some, like, finely grated garlic, or better yet, garlic blended into lemon juice and strained so there's no, like, chunks of raw garlic. And then it, like, aerates it. It makes it really fluffy.
Whip it by hand?
You could. It's faster if you do it in a food processor or, okay, like, with a KitchenAid, but you could totally do it with a whisk and, like, a ton of ice water.
Season the tahina first.
Season it, whip it up.
All right, whip
then
it up.
Put everything in there together and just, like, let it rip until it's...
Let it rip.
Ready to go.
Those are awesome tips.
And this is why you guys have the best hummus.
I mean, yeah.
This side of
this side of the Atlantic. Anyway.
Yeah. So the thing that you guys do at Dizengoff as a hummusia... Yeah, like, give that little...
Yeah.
Is you have different specials every single day with, like, different toppings. So it's not just hummus every single day. There's, like, a different flavor.
Yeah, totally. So it's not like when you go to the grocery store and you want to buy some Sabra roasted red pepper hummus or, like, what are the other flavors?
Lemon. I bought that yesterday.
Pine nut, garlic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like that. It's not, like, blended into it. You're not going to get, like, a... Like, when we have, like, beet hummus, it's not going to be, like, purple hummus. It's going to be, like, hummus with beets on it.
Right.
So we always take the same base because it's, like, a perfect palette for pretty much everything. And then, like, in Israel, you'll see it. Like, you'll see whole cooked chickpeas, hard-boiled eggs, like, stewed legumes, or, like, Jerusalem style would be, like, spiced ground meat that's served warm on top. So we kind of took that principle and, like...
Right, because
modernized
one
it.
Thing they do in Israel that people don't really do here is they eat hummus as a meal, like, not as a condiment, not as a salad.
It's not a snack. It's not, like, to put in your kid's lunchbox kind of thing. It's, like...
Yeah.
It's a meal, and it should be a meal because it's, like, very nutritious and, like, filling and delicious.
Super filling.
Yeah. So, like, in Philly, and what we'll do in New York too, is like you'll get your bowl of hummus. There'll be five or six options, like what toppings do you want today. We've had like slow roasted tomatoes with pistachios. We've had like pickled beets. We've had poached and pulled like Yemenite style chicken with hot sauce. We've had like 90 or 100 different toppings, I think. We change them every couple days. And like some of them stay in our back pocket for a good reason. Like they're super popular. And
what are the most popular ones?
The chicken skin one's really popular.
Oh my God.
It's like, which is sort of like our, it's like fried chicken skins with sumac and a hard-boiled egg and like a charred tomato sauce. But it's like, chicken skins are really ubiquitous in Jewish cuisine. It's called gribnas, and it's like when you like cook down all the chicken skins so there's just the fat left over, you strain off the schmaltz and you save that for something, and then you have all these crispy skins and you just eat them. So that's like our play on that tradition. Another big one, like anything with lamb, like people flip out when there's lamb on the menu. Which
I saw the lamb neck. Lamb neck. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I hope they have that.
We like can't run it all the time because it's like obscenely expensive.
And how many necks can you get your hands on?
How many
on,
necks
really?
Do they have? Like, yeah. Only one.
There's only one per animal.
One neck per lamb.
You know? So like how many bowls of hummus can we get out of that lamb?
Maybe you can make friends with the guys over at Dixon's Farm Stand.
Well, we're working on that. Trust me. They're really cool, by the way.
Yeah,
so it's like a
they're
side
super
note,
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you'll have the whole rest of the lamb to probably,
yeah,
like...
then we can do something else.
Give back to them or something.
Yeah. So those are, like, the most popular ones, but, like, anything with, like, eggplant. Like, people are always like, oh, do you have baba ganoush? I'm like, not today, because it's January, but, like, check back when the eggplant's going to taste good in the summer, and we'll talk.
August is going to be your time.
Yeah. So how do you come up with the ingredients? Is it you that comes... that makes those final decisions?
It's, like, kind of collaborative. Like, a lot of stuff, like, especially the techniques I've borrowed from Mike, and, like, he's borrowed them from, like, a national cuisine.
Like Israel.
Like Israel, for example. But, like, it's cool because that cuisine isn't just, it's one thing. It's not, like, French cuisine or, like, German cuisine or, I mean, none of them are just that anyway. But it's, like, so diverse. There's, like, 95 or like 100 different cultures that are represented in that country because it's all immigrants and it's new. So like there's a million different traditions. You can like make Spanish food and call it Israeli. Mm-hmm. Like you can use saffron and tomatoes and make like a sofrito and it's still sort of Israeli because it's the same principle and like they serve that there. So mm-hmm. You have a lot of freedom. But like ingredient wise, we try to stick with seasons as much as we can. It's hard in Philadelphia because we have winter.
We have that here, too.
Yeah.
Sorry to break that to you.
But that's what, like, root vegetables are for, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I've had some good fennel.
Yeah, the fennel. Fennel's been there. Good. Fennel's good.
Y'all do anything with apples?
We do. We make, there's this condiment called amba, which is, like, a Yemenite kind of pickled mango curry sort of tart
so
sauce,
good.
Which is so good. And you get it, like, you always get it with, like, a falafel. And they have it, like, on tables at Humasillas. And it has a ton of fenugreek, too, so it makes you smell really bad, but it's so good. But they make it with mango, like, pickled green mango, and we make a variety with green apples, because it's, like, the same sort of principles, like sweet, tart fruit and tons of spices.
Cool. So how is a Hav in New York different than the one in Philadelphia, or is it not?
Wait, do you mean Dizengoff or Zahav?
Sorry, Dizengoff.
Okay, I was scared. I was like, I didn't know they were going
to
do that.
Oh, yeah, they're opening that, too. I was the one who was supposed to break it, too. And you're the chef.
You're also the chef there.
How are they different? We are going to be a little bit smaller. Like, we have a standalone restaurant in Philly, so we have tables. It's all family style, like, shared communal seating kind of deal. But there's tables. We have, like, a door. We have windows. At Chelsea Market, you don't really have that luxury. So we are just going to be, like, open to the world. And we have a counter with, like, 18 seats. So we're going to probably be doing a lot of takeout, which is fine. And we are also going to be a lot busier. And we're going to be doing, like, we're going to have great deals on the pita. Like, we've been pushing it back for so long to, like, just sell pita by itself. But it's going to be more easily available here because we'll have the capacity to do it, I think. because our pita is like pretty unreal. It's all made by hand in house. Every like it's made with like 20 minutes before you eat it usually, so it's super fresh. What else is different?
I heard a rumor there's going to be dinner.
There will be dinner. I'm like trying not to think about it yet because it's like
sorry,
it has to be down the road because we just have to like open and you know make sure everything else is like tight first. But as of right now, we're kind of thinking like $30 to $35 per person prefix for like three courses, which is a steal.
Yes,
I think no matter where you are.
So will there be food beyond hummus? There available will. For
yeah,
dinner?
We'll probably do like a really like special hummus, like kind of shared, like maybe with like really nice mushrooms, or you know, we could do some like sea urchin kind of stuff. We could do whatever we want.
Sea urchin hummus.
It happens. I mean, don't be scared, but we've done it before.
I am not scared. I am the opposite of scared.
Not at all scared.
I'm ready. I am coming for that.
Yeah. I'll let you guys
talk about Ridge.
And then for the, like entrees, I'll have like a choice. Like, do you want like chicken or vegetable or meat or whatever? And it'll change every day, which I think will be really fun. And it'll be very casual, really straightforward. Like, no fancy plates, no tweezers, no forceps, no bullshit. Like, just we're gonna cook food in the Taboon, which is like our oven. It's like a pizza oven. You know, we'll have like a whole roasted leg of lamb, and we'll just like shave it off when people sit down, and like pass it on a plate with some like condiments and pickles, and let them eat and like, oh sorry, let them eat and like drink great Israeli wine with it, and that's it.
And I also heard there's going to be a little bit of like the salatim that happens.
Yeah, we're going to offer salatim.
Can you explain what salatim?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So salatim are like small salads, basically. When you sit down at any table in Israel. Anywhere, you're going to be confronted as soon as you sit down with like 10 different plates with little tiny salads on them.
Confronted in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, but you're like, oh, I'm just like a little hungry. I'm going to get a snack. And then like, boom, there's like 20 plates in front of you.
And you're like, oh, I haven't ordered yet. And I already have a feast.
So we're going to offer three different ones every day, which will change just like the toppings too. So we'll have like red pepper salad with walnuts, which is like muhammara. It's a Syrian pepper salad. This is, like, our opening menu. Moroccan carrots, which you also find everywhere, like, cooked with saffron, carrot juice, some Aleppo chili, garlic. And then kohlrabi, which is, like, my favorite vegetable, I think. Like, raw. Just marinated with skoog, which is another Yemenite condiment that you find everywhere. It's a green chili paste with cilantro and garlic. And it's really nice. So those are just some ideas that we're going to have.
Well, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
That
and
we're,
delicious.
We're going to also, like, offer, like, kind of, not catering style, but, like, if you just want to get, like, a pint of a salad to go and take home for dinner, you can do that now.
And I like how you guys call it salads, but, like, in our minds, or the American interpretation, like, we would just think of those as dips, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, it's all stuff that's just super easy to eat. Like, you can scoop it up with pita, but you're like, oh, I'm still eating a salad.
Yeah, it's, like, all cooked vegetables, too, and I don't know... I guess it just goes back to, like, way, way, way back in the day. Like, it's, like, a pre-refrigeration kind of thing, and, like, raw foods were harder to keep mm-hmm. for obvious reasons. So things are preserved, but they're delicious, and you can, like, do so many more things with them.
Yeah. So I know you guys don't have the exact date yet of when you're opening, but it's soon.
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 So what else needs to happen?
Like, to open?
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, this long list of, like, licenses and... people we have to call and stuff that I like am totally daunted by, and I luckily have nothing to do with because I would be too scared, but it's like
very intimidating.
Fire departments and like Con Edison, and
so you have to call official people.
Building department,
health department,
and then the people can have their hummus,
and then we'll open.
How does it feel to be part of this like just huge sort of like national trend of everybody wanting to eat Middle Eastern food all the time?
I mean, it's cool to be kind of at the forefront of it mm-hmm. with this company. Like, I know that Mike doesn't take all the credit for it, but sometimes I think he should. There are other people cooking this food in the West. Like Alon Shaya in New Orleans just opened his Israeli restaurant last year. He's great. He went to Israel with us too, and like his food is awesome. Yotam Ottolenghi is mostly a cookbook writer. I know he has restaurants, and I think he's British, right?
He's Israeli.
Or he's Israeli, but he
lives in London.
Lives in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
The Maloofs, you know, there's a lot of people, but it's never been, like, I didn't know that Americans like this food so much.
Well, I don't know that Americans knew they liked this food so much either.
Yeah, I feel like it's a lot of well-timed things happening.
Yeah.
My finger's not on the pulse. I have a Lebanese grandmother, and I grew up with this food. So I, as an American, love this food, however.
Right. But not a lot of people have ever had it before in, like, a serious way, I think. Yeah. And this is, like, a cool opportunity to, like, introduce it to them, and people take it seriously and, like, you know, treat it with respect and
yeah.
stuff.
It's delicious. And well, healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Mike has been, you know, he's like has this little mini empire going in Philly, or maybe it's like a big empire because Philly's not so big. But, like, how does this change everything with you guys expanding to New York? Where do you feel like the company's moving at this point?
I think they're looking at, like, more expansion, not just with Dizengoff, but also Federal Donuts, which is under the umbrella. And if you guys have never heard of that, that's a fried chicken and donut shop. And that is all that they serve besides coffee.
And it is wonderful.
Oh, I love it.
And it is amazing. They already have 5 shops in Philly, and they are in the works for expansion other places on the East Coast, which I'm not at liberty to discuss yet, but that is also something that's, like, primed for expansion. So they're going to be traveling a lot, and they're going to be very busy for the next couple years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be fun.
Great. Well, so, we are very excited to welcome you to New York.
Thanks, guys.
And I like the fact that Federal Donuts might expand to us, maybe.
I think anything that you guys want to bring to New York is going to be very welcomed.
Yeah,
I think so too.
100%.
Yeah. Great. Well, Emily, thank you so much for being on the show. Please do not go away.
Okay.
Nope. I'm not done with you.
We are going to take a commercial break, and then we'll be back with the morning after quiz.
Welcome back to The Morning After. I'm Leslie Stockton, and it's time for the quiz.
Yay!
With Emily Seaman. Emily, don't stress it. This is a very unimportant quiz, but it'll be a fun one.
Okay.
So
we won't judge you.
You're
that
Emily.
Much.
Yeah, no, of course not. Not to your face, at least. Your name is Emily Seaman, and you know all about that. But what do you know about the Navy?
Get it? Seaman?
Oh, I get it, guys. I get it. I did go through elementary school, middle school, and high school, after all. I know a lot of things about my name.
Well, I'm going to ask you 3 questions about the U.S. Navy.
Okay.
But
multiple
don't
choice.
Worry. They're multiple, three multiple choice questions. Okay, so are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the U.S. Navy, on ships, a common prank is called the taco. What does this entail? A, douse a sleeping sailor in fish guts and wrap them tightly in a blanket.
Ugh.
B, the mess hall makes an unsuspecting sailor a plate of tacos out of festering garbage food from the previous days. Or C, a group of sailors sneak up on a showering sailor and tightly wrap him up in the mildew-infested shower curtain.
Oh, my God.
One of these is true.
I can't believe that.
I know.
Is it A?
No.
What is it?
C.
Oh.
They call it the shower taco.
It kind of reminds me of when you went to Smith and you wrapped up your meat.
But instead of a dirty, mildew shower curtain, it was clean, lovely kale.
Yeah.
Okay. Navy SEALs basic training has an 80% dropout rate. When you just stop and think about that, that's kind of insane.
That's a lot.
When a sailor decides they simply cannot take any more of this grueling course, it's called what? A, pulling a Palin. B, wash out. Or C, clubbing a seal.
Clubbing a seal?
What's the first one?
Pulling a Palin.
Like Sarah?
Yeah, like Sarah Palin. Just like,
it's probably not that one then, right? Is it B?
Yes. Wash out. They wash out. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really glad it's not clubbing a seal.
It's not clubbing a seal.
Horrible.
That is horrible.
I know. I actually did make that up this morning, and I giggled to myself how horrible that was.
It is
like, it's going in. Third one. You've answered one right. This is awesome.
It was really good.
Okay. The USS William D. Porter was a World War II battleship. Its maiden mission was to escort the USS Iowa, which was carrying the President, Secretary of State, and the Joint Chiefs, to a political summit in Iran, where our heads of state were attending a secret meeting with Winston Churchill and Joseph Stalin. This mission was calamitous, to say the least. What was one of the many mistakes the USS Porter made on this one single trip, which lasted 8 days? A, while pulling out of port, it wrecked its sister ship by failing to entirely pull up its anchor, which then dragged along the deck, destroying the railings and lifeboats of the other ship. B, accidentally launched a torpedo towards the USS Iowa that was carrying the president. Or C, let a live depth charge accidentally roll off the ship's deck, which then almost blew up the ship carrying the president.
What?
One of those things really happened?
One of those
things. For real, though?
Yes, for real.
Is it A?
It is A.
And
it's
wow!
Wait, it's a trick question. All of those things happened.
No way!
On that 1 8-day trip.
That is a trick question.
It was a trick question, but...
But you still got two out of... Wait, can you say what A is again?
A is, while pulling out of port, it wrecked its sister ship. It was the first mistake of many. Failing to entirely pull up the anchor, which then dragged along the deck, destroying the railings and the lifeboats on that other ship.
Oh, my God. Two out of three is really good.
Two out of three is
almost
great.
Almost no one has ever gotten two out of three.
But I had to make the third one like a cheat question because they were all so good I couldn't pick one.
I agree. I mean, how could you even?
There were eight. So there five other horrible things happened.
Well, no, there were two other horrible things that happened to that ship.
Uh huh.
That ship did, but not on that 8 day trip.
Oh, eight.
These three things happened in a span of 8 days while they were escorting the president, Secretary of State, and Joint Chiefs to a secret meeting with Stalin and Churchill.
All because your name is Seaman.
All because your name
That's probably, Seaman. Yeah, you guys are right.
well done.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
This is awesome.
Tell us out there how we can follow the progress of Diesengoff. Like, how are we going to find out when it's open? And then once it's open, is there a Twitter or a website?
There's all of those things.
Okay.
Because it is 2016, so you have to have all of the things.
That's right.
So there's a Twitter. I think the Twitter account is not ready yet, but I could be wrong.
I definitely used it today.
Okay, so it is. So she knows what it is. But
it's Diesengoff NYC.
Okay, that's easy to remember. And that's also our Instagram handle. That's handle, right?
Yeah.
Sorry,
yep.
I'm like not
it's handle.
Really into this.
That's okay. Then, you just make hummus.
Yeah. We have a website, diesengoffnyc.com, and I'm sure it'll be on like somebody's blog or something. Somebody's
going to
tell
be.
You about it.
Someone's going to say something.
Always Eater.
Yeah.
They're all going
to
pick it up.
And we'll go to Chelsea Market and we'll eat all the hummus.
And if we're not open yet and you want to go there anyway, you can just pester the sandwich guys across the way from us because they've been getting questions like every day.
At the Italian market?
Yeah. The Capones. They're like facing us and they're like, 20 people came up yesterday and asked us if you were open yet. And I was like, sorry, guys. They don't want sandwiches. They want hummus. Sorry.
Okay. Good to know.
So just go bug them.
I will.
Okay. Cool. Well, we can't wait.
We will try and contain ourselves until that time.
I'm pretty excited.
I'm really excited. Yeah. Okay, we'll go bug the Capones. All right. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Emily.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you, Sari.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.